This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you ka-ching. Ka-ching. Come on, guys, we talked about this. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And once you start selling, Shopify makes getting paid simple by instantly accepting every type of payment. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. You want to grow big? Shopify. You want to grow small? Shopify. You want to grow medium rare? Also Shopify. Shopify powers 10% of all commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. You are listening to a special edition iFanboy podcast on Red. To a special edition iFanboy podcast on the movie Red. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
And joining us today is John Suntress from Word Balloon.
Howdy, boys.
Hey, John. Hi, welcome. John. Welcome to the fray.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So this is a special edition podcast on the movie. We're going to talk about the film. There'll be spoilers if you haven't seen the movie or you don't want to be spoiled. Pause the show. Come back after you've seen it because we can't be held responsible for your own actions.
So, Red, starring Bruce Willis, Morgan Freeman, John Malkovich,
Helen Mirren,
yeah.
Mary Louise Parker.
That's who it was, Mary Louise Parker.
Carl Urban.
Yeah, Carl Urban, yep.
The ubiquitous Carl Urban. Yeah.
So,
Ernest Borgnine, who's still alive, apparently.
I'm 93 and I can still act.
It opened in theaters this weekend, and this is the film that is, I think it's safe to say, loosely adapted from the three-issue miniseries Red, written by Warren Ellis, drawn by Cully Hamner. When did it come out?
2003,
right? Okay, so before we talk about the movie, have either of you read the comic?
Yes.
Okay, so I had never read it, and I tracked it down. I read it this week because I wanted to be prepared for it.
Oh, you read it this week because I have no memory of what actually happened in the comics.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah, no, I literally read it like yesterday. So yeah,
so it was loosely adapted then.
loosely is a generous term.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, it's basically the concept, right? The concept
of the comic book is that there's this retired CIA assassin who Frank Moses, who in the movie is played by Bruce Willis, and he's sent out to pasture. He's in this house and very Goodfellas-esque, living by himself. But in the comic, new head of the CIA is getting briefed, and whoever's briefing him tells him about Frank's existence. And for whatever reason, the head of the CIA gets freaked out, says, "This guy can't exist. We need to take him out," and calls an order to take him out. And then they send a hit squad to his house. He takes out the hit squad, and then he decides to go to the CIA to find out who wanted to kill him. That's all the comic book is about.
Yeah, I remember it was during Warren's very deconstructed period. So I remember it being very light on story and heavy on action, which is fine. Yeah. I remember enjoying it. I just don't remember the story at all.
And now,
those are those three issue miniseries that came out from homage from Warren when he was cranking them out. And especially as someone who had just come back to comics, it was really exciting to see this kind of fun, violent action in comic books and stuff. So, yeah, it was a very refreshing miniseries at the time.
Yeah, and it was a lot of fun. But when I heard that they were making the movie of it, and after reading it, I was like, so is this movie going to be a half an hour? Like, I mean, like, it was like, because it was really, the comic was very straightforward. It had the Mary Louise Parker character, who is a, she's works in the Department of Pension Services for the government. Yeah. And he calls her. He's like, she's the only outside person that he has no family, has no whatever. And in the comic, he calls her about his checks, but her role got way beefed up. They beefed up the romance in the movie. Like it was really interesting to see in this day, like when I walked out of it, my thought was like, in this day and age of Zack Snyder direct translation, Frank Miller-esque movies, where scene for scene, shot for shot, script for script, and then looking at like Kick-Ass, which had the tone and the feel of the comic book, but wasn't exact. This was as far down that spectrum where it had the seed of an idea, and then they built this whole movie around it, which I thought
once I saw the trailer, yeah. I knew what to expect and that it was going to be different. And to Ellis and Hamner's credit, they were pretty forthright saying, look, this isn't, a direct translation. So that was okay.
Yeah.
The story of the film is similar. There's a Frank Moses character people try to kill him, and they're trying to kill his whole team because of something that happened in their CIA past. And then they find out it's the vice president, and they go to investigate. I mean, there's a lot. The skeleton work is there.
But they added a lot to it.
They added a lot of beef to it, which I really enjoyed the film. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It was basically what I expected going in. It was a bunch of actors who had probably passed their action prime doing or never have done action before, like Helen Mirren.
Yep.
Doing a fun, goofy sort of action comedy, and I enjoyed it. It was what I was expecting and what I was hoping for it to be.
Yeah, it was like a senior citizen Ocean's 11, and I mean that in a very positive way. Because
actually, it was a senior citizen's A-Team.
Yeah, yeah.
True, absolutely. And yeah, you're right, coming off the A-Team this summer. And that's okay. The only slight disappointment I had was that it was a very by-the-numbers spy procedural road picture.
Sure.
Here's the complication. Let's go to point A, get a little more information, gunfire. Point B, car crash, more information, and that's okay. I really think the stars elevated, though, the very simple plot. And also, maybe in this day and age where, I think all three of us are real movie hounds and really enjoy and appreciate cool movies and interesting movies. This is a movie for the masses. And I think the stars will draw people in, and also they elevate this very pedestrian spy story.
Well, yeah, I mean, we always joke about when we talk about these movies, and I apply my dad filter to it. But like, of all the movies we've seen this year, this is the one that I think he needs to go see, because it's because of the older stars, and it reminded me of that Space Cowboys movie. Remember when Clint Eastwood and all that? But that movie kind of treated them like, oh, look at them, they're old and they're cute and they're doing things. And like, it was all very kind of looking down, condescending to him, where this was very empowering for people who are older,
we're still capable, we can still kick your ass, we're still good at our job. It was very pedestrian in terms of, I think the direction was very pedestrian, and there was a lot of sort of clunkiness, but again, like John said, it was about seeing Bruce Willis one more time. It was about Morgan Freeman. It was about John Malkovich being crazy and having a gun. It was about Helen Mirren with machine guns. It was more about watching these people. It was kind of like, and I hate to say it this way, but one more lap around the track.
Yeah,
of course.
Kind of movie, like,
very much so.
We'll do this one more time, and it'll be fun. These kind of films, you don't go to see innovative direction or writing. You go to see these movie stars doing their movie star turn one more time before too old to shoot guns, and they're too old to do that.
And in that manner, it worked. Like, I totally enjoyed it. I had a blast enjoying it. I thought it was very simple. And John, you're right. It was point A to point B, point C, but it was like enjoyable doing it. It wasn't challenging, it wasn't innovative. Early on, I got a little worried because there was a lot of the cinematographer, the director, whoever, loved the Michael Bay 360 shot in like the first third of the movie. I was like, oh, I'm getting dizzy because we just keep wrapping around people. And then there was that one scene when Carl Urban's chasing Bruce Willis and he jumps out of the cop car.
Yeah.
And he just kind of like opened the door and slid out of it while the car is spinning. And I was like, oh, is it going to be like, but then after that, it completely dropped the cheesy camera effects overexposed, effects, kind of look, and was very straightforward. So,
yeah, it's a good point, actually. Yeah. I cause I saw it a couple months ago at a sneak preview through my radio station. And, The other thing is, now, you know, another movie from the 80s that is kind of like, oh, isn't it nice to see the old people can still do it? It reminded me of Tough Guys, the Kirk Douglas, Burt Lancaster film where they were criminals coming out of prison and decide to rob a bank again and or plan a big heist. And in a lot of ways, John Malkovich's character in particular reminded me of Eli Wallach's character in that movie, in that 20 years ago, John Malkovich was always, you know, it was 20 years ago in The Line of Fire, films like that, where he was the crazy guy and the psycho. He's the psycho here, but it's all tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
And
but he's also always right.
Yep.
He's crazy, but he's always right. He's always paranoia turns out to be true. The helicopter is following them. The woman in the airport is chasing them. All of his craziness was borne out to be correct.
Yeah.
Definitely. But yeah, I thought a lot of their characters, as you guys said, it was one more time around the track. But of course, that played to the story, too. I mean, that essentially was what the story was about. You know, I thought the set design and I just thought it was a good looking, eye appealing movie.
Yeah, it was very believable, very, very grounded in the real world, I thought.
Yeah, and I also just – the only disappointment from a performance standpoint, and just because I love him and I know how multifaceted he is, Brian Cox playing such a cut-rate Russian who even is named Ivan, for God's sake. I really felt they didn't give him enough to do other than, you know, be a little puppy dog that's still in love with Helen Mirren. So
I liked their relationship, though. I liked that. I liked it a lot for some reason because it felt like there was passion there and they're old. And it's always nice because, you know, often in film is a young man's game. You know, old people aren't shown to be passionate and in love. And
you're right.
I like that point of it.
And I'm sure, as you were saying, Ron, about your dad, too. I mean, I have relatives as well that are older that are just like, there's nothing in the theaters for us.
Right. Yeah.
And
exactly.
It's like, well, speaking of that, when I walked in, I went to the daytime show on Friday.
Yeah.
And granted, my theater is near a retirement community. I think when I walked in the theater, I brought the average age down to 60.
Dude, exactly the same. I went to the 4 o'clock showing on a Friday, and admittedly, and my theater, I don't know its proximity to a retirement home, but it's the same theater I go to every time. It's the Kabuki here in San Francisco. It's a fairly upscale, you know, like it's you pick your seats and there's a bar and stuff like that. And no joke, when the movie ended, we walked out. The number of oxygen tanks I saw was way. No, I'm not even joking. Yeah, there was a whole bunch of senior citizens at this movie, and I was like, oh, nice, awesome. Like it's totally connecting.
I was also really comfortable though. I was like, it's like seeing a movie like that with your grandparents.
Yeah.
I used to work the third shift, so in radio, so those were the shows that I used to be able to go to. You'll find that most retirees are the ones that are going to see the film at 4 o'clock on a school day.
Yeah,
retirees, and podcasters.
Yeah, yes. but I do want to give it up, and I do want to highlight Carl Urban. He should be in every movie.
No kidding.
I don't mind either.
He was awesome.
Fantastic, I thought. I mean, very straightforward, very whatever, but it was just like, he was great. And like, what was really funny was that the person I saw the movie with, like, yeah, who was that guy? I'm like, that was Carl Urban. It's like, oh, I've never heard of him before. I'm like, yes, you have. I'm like, you saw Lord of the Rings. You saw Star Trek. And they were like, oh my God, he just slips into this role and you forget.
He's very charismatic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
he's going to be Judge Dredd.
Good looking guy.
Yeah.
Great. Oh, that's right. He is going to be Judge Dredd.
He's going to be a great Judge Dredd. Yeah.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. Yeah, that's, you know, honestly, I was telling people before, you know, this podcast that when I had seen it and talking to them about it as the trailers kept, you know, growing and commercials were going, I'm like, you know, you should go see it. If you like these actors, you're going to enjoy the film because it's breezy. It's light enough. And the other thing, too, just coming back from the New York Con and being on an airplane, I'm like, this will be a perfect airplane movie. Because this will be very easy to edit down and still keep most of its elements, but you can edit it down for time and still enjoy it. I mean, that's the thing. It's, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but it's the type of film that you could really turn away from and not feel like you've missed any, you know, crucial portion of the plot.
Yeah, you can pick up what's going on, and the twists were fairly not obvious, but easy to understand. They're broad. They're easy to understand. Yeah. What I just thought was so funny is that I know he won't go see it, but just put yourself in Warren Ellis's mind if he goes to see this movie.
Warren Ellis sees giant dollar signs running across the
screen. True. Yeah. Fair enough.
I would love to have an intimate conversation and really get his honest opinion. And that's what I would warn is if anyone is going in expecting that kind of, you know, intricate Warren Ellis story and stuff. No, you're not going to find it.
But that's the thing
although the Mason character was very much a Warren Ellis type hero. He was tough. He was laconic. He he was really, really good at his job, but he's also sensitive inside. I mean, that's very much the Warren Ellis archetype, you know, guy.
But I didn't get that from reading the comic. I don't know how you felt, Ron. You just
I don't remember the comic.
No, yeah. Well, I was gonna say I didn't get that emotional connection because they really played up the romance with Mary Louise Parker and the desire to have a life and all that sort of stuff. Whereas in the comic, it was just all action, you know, on a mission. You know,
badass.
But that said,
I'm coming after you.
Yeah, but that said, in given that it was completely loyal to the comic book because it was only 1/8 of the movie. You know what I mean?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So I think it was a faithful loose adaptation, but they just added on so much to it. I mean, they invented the whole Guatemala vice president, the whole thing in the past that was all invented. They invented Morgan Freeman. They invented John Malkovich. They invented Helen Mirren. They expanded on Mary Louise Parker. Like every, you know, Carl Urban, you know, like it was all, you know, like it's really interesting to see, like, okay, here, take this comic book and make a two-hour movie out of it, which I thought, by the way, I did think it was long. Like, it got to the point where towards the end where I'm like, oh, it's still going, you know, like I thought it would be, I thought this would be a little faster. Not that was bad, but it was the kind of thing where I just thought it was longer than I thought it would be. I always thought the Helen Mirren and Brian Cox romance was a little superfluous, but I did enjoy it though, but yeah,
really, outside of that, though, really, Brian Cox had nothing else to do. And again, that was my frustration with his, you know, limited role. Yeah. And then on the other side, I thought Borgnine's role was a little bit more than a cameo because he certainly had more than one scene.
Yeah.
And again, at 93, I mean, everyone gives it up to Betty White. Ernest Borgnine, it's so funny. You think 20 years ago he was doing The Single Guy on NBC and was the doorman on that Jonathan Silverman show and stuff.
He's
and now,
spry. He's still out. He'll do it.
You know, and Ain't It Cool News has a great interview with him that includes audio text as well. And also the Television Academy has been doing these oral histories with actors and producers and writers about the golden age of television. And Borgnine just did that last year. He is incredibly sharp. He still is very much on his game. And, I mean, literally is a walking, living history of, you know, the last 60 years of film and television. And God, 55 years ago, the man won the Academy Award for Marty. That's crazy.
And he's got some hell of a set of eyebrows. Man, just amazing. Every time he was on screen, I was mesmerized. I was like, look at those eyebrows.
It was a really good cast. I mean, you had Richard Dreyfuss was the villain. You had
Rebecca we haven't even talked about Dreyfuss.
From David Mamet's muse, Rebecca Pidgeon was one of the bad guys. I mean, you had a whole really strong cast of actors in this film.
Yeah,
from playing every major role.
No, it was. I mean, it was really strong and it was really good. And I would easily recommend this to anybody to go see it for a fun action movie. It was good. It was totally.
Yeah, if I had to quantify it in like a 4-star, a 4-star review, I'd give it 2.5, an optimistic 2.5 stars. Well, saying if even further, if you like these stars, you'll love it, and I would say then it'll probably be a 3 for you.
2.5 is harsh, man. That's like I was gonna say 3.5. I was like I'm hard pressed to find anything wrong with it. You know what I mean?
Out
like,
of 4 stars, really?
Yeah, well, not 4 stars. Yeah, out of 4 stars. Yeah, I wouldn't get. I don't think it, you know. By no means is it gonna win.
Let's
an award
keep with the iFanboy 5-star scale.
Fair enough. To keep with the iFanboy scale, I would give it 4 stars. Yeah.
Then I would give it 3.
Yeah. So Connor,
I'll go 3.5. We'll split the difference.
Yeah.
It lives in that 3.5-4 range. It was fun. It was a fun film. You don't need to run out and see it on the theater if that's your thing. If you want to wait for the DVD, it's totally fine.
Although the explosions and stuff, the theater experience is fun.
It was a fun time to see. I had my soda, I had my chocolate. I sat there with the retirees. We talked about knee injuries.
Malkovich was good. I mean, his
he was funny. Helen Mirren was shooting big ass machine guns.
Yep.
Mary Louise Parker wore a lot of low cut shirts.
She was cute. Yeah.
And that's always what's
you know what made me think of in the middle of it was there's that scene in the beginning when Morgan Freeman's talking to Bruce Willis and he's talking about how he's old. And I was like, he is old. I don't want him to be old.
Yeah, he is.
There
old.
You go. Yeah. Well, all of them are. God, Dreyfuss, too. Yeah. You know, Dreyfuss, my God, that, you know, American Graffiti, that was 40 years ago. Oh, I mean, that's the thing. No, and even Helen Mirren, and you know, I think of movies like The Long Good Friday and stuff like that. You know, that's like they all have badass films in their past. Most of them do.
Yeah.
Most of the cast, certainly the older members of the cast. And that's why, you know, when you said, too, you're not used to seeing Helen Mirren, I guess you never toted the hardware, but she was certainly in a lot of, like, hard-nosed British crime films like The Long Good Friday and things like that.
No, she's been in those films, but she's never.
And Prime Suspect,
from the mountain.
No, that's
yeah.
That's true.
So,
and also, I think only of the big time 80s and 90s action stars, I think only Bruce Willis can pull this kind of thing off.
Yep, agreed.
I think he was always the best actor of those guys. You couldn't have Schwarzenegger doing this role without it being goofy. You couldn't have Stallone without it being goofy.
Well, and Van Damme. Right,
I think Bruce Willis was always the best actor of all those guys, and he could do all the most. He had the most range of all those guys. So I think
this film too was really a tightrope where. You're right. The wrong actor would have totally made it goofy, and I think they gave it enough credibility that it was wry and kind of tongue in cheek without being broad and ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of helped ground it as well.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So
it's a fun time.
Yeah. So go. Yeah. So if you're looking for a fun movie, definitely recommend it. And don't freak out about the comic book or anything like that, because I think it was loyal to it. So it just
also did well in its first day of release. It came in strong second to Jackass.
And it was released in the perfect time of year too, because it's going to be before the Oscar push and everything. Yeah. So I really think for a mid-fall kind of film,
a good window.
It really would. Yeah, exactly, and I think it will, it'll be very successful, I think.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. So head over to iFanboy.com. There'll be a post about the movie where you can, other folks will be talking about it and where the podcast lives, so you can check that out, and we want to hear what you think of it. So go to iFanboy.com and tell everyone what you thought of Red.
And we'll be here. I don't even know what the next one is. But...
Are we done for the year? Or?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think
we might be.
I think we are. Good, thank God. It was a lot of movies this year.
Do you want a quick moment of comic book season? How the whole year was, or is that a topic for another day?
I don't know about that. I don't know if I got the energy for that one. Maybe.
All right, man. Make its own interesting show though later on.
Yeah, totally.
About that. Maybe that'll come up later. But until next time, I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
I'm John.
And so go see Red. Enjoy it. It was good. Just gotta sign out. Take some medication. It's the same old drag. Oh, you know you don't need none of that. It's the same old drag. Oh, you know you don't need none of that. It's the same. It's the same. It's the same. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that you keep going on and on, over and over. In your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.